Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. This is Technori Live from WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting next to me, I mean, I'm probably going to mess this name up because I always do, but Steve Inkenbrandt.
Perfect.
Malilly,
yes, yeah. Sir. Yeah.
And Malilly stands for Make It Like You Like It.
Yes, sir.
Which is awesome. Tell the story and make it like you like it. That was actually a really funny story.
Yeah, well, it actually started before Malilly. We were at another company, the three founders and I all worked together. And we're outside actually in the alley. We're down at Clark Street where you used to throw the football around the alley. And we were talking about one of the problems with some code we were writing and two different versions of solving the same problem. They're both good versions. One of the guys was like, well, make it like you like it. I said, Malilly? He said, yeah.
And so I love how it's just assumed that Malilly is the pronunciation because I look at this and I'm like, I got to tell you, I don't see Malilly in this, but
I
also don't know how to read.
Now it's got 9 years, so it's definitely
It's in.
It's Malilly.
I just looked at this, I'm thinking like, man, I'm so illiterate because every time I read stuff, people's names, I'm the worst. Like my new thing on every show is that I just screw everyone's name.
You
up.
Said my name perfectly. I've heard you mispronounce a few names, but
all of them.
It was great.
I screw up everybody's
name.
Well, you know what? You have to come on again and I'll mess your name up. And
then, I like it. Next
time. Maybe I'll mess it up for different reasons because, like I said to you before, the other studio, we get to drink at that studio.
Well,
so
there we go.
It's more of a Thlurin Inkenbrandt kind of name going on. But anyway, I'm excited to learn more about this company. It seems like I've seen your name written. I haven't heard the name. I've been seeing it in a lot of different publications. I've seen it in Inno. I've seen it in Built-In. I've seen it in other places.
Yep.
For those who are listening, why don't you kind of just start off? What is the business? And a little bit of a backstory on how you came to build this business with your partners.
Sure. So today our focus is e-discovery. So the world of e-discovery is large-scale litigation, government investigations, FOIA requests. And we actually got our start almost 9 years ago now. We kind of left to start the company. A lot of it was about the culture. Myself and the two founders worked in another software company. It was VC funded, kind of through the third round of VC. And, it's great sometimes. But for us, there was a bit of how we want to build a software team, how we want to build a culture around an engineering team. We thought, hey, if we go out and start our own thing, we can definitely control that. And that's kind of a core premise, I think, of us. Been around 9 years now, just under 40 right now, probably 50 by the end of the year. That's the plan. But we're bootstrapped. We do a lot of services work that's helped find the ideas and build the ideas for the products that we have today. And I just kind of stumbled into our first project, maybe not totally stumbled, have a relationship, have friends with the team that provides Relativity, a company here in Chicago called K-Cura. And our very first product.
My first question was going to ask you about our friends at K-Cura. We absolutely love them. Andrew and Dory, we've had them on the show.
Yeah,
we've worked with them. We're working on some philanthropic stuff with them. Very exciting. It was a logical guess of like, who else is in this space in town that you might know?
Yeah. Andrew and I go way back. Technically, I was one of the original founders at K-Cura pre-relativity days.
Yep.
So Andrew and I were a couple like just young pups out of college, a couple of years of consulting experience and, went off, started our own company. And we were doing consulting, paying the bills and looking for a product idea. Then I ended up going to a product company. About a year or two later, Andrew started doing e-discovery. So some of his consulting work turned into what's now Relativity, obviously successful and great product.
Yep.
And when we started our consulting firm, Andrew, knowing Andrew well, he was like, hey, I have this project. We've been really busy. We don't do the consulting work anymore. We're focused on our product. Can you help? Did that first one, think it was just, one gig to pay the bills and kind of move on to something else and figure out what we were going to do as a company. And, it's evolved over 9 years. We did more and more e-discovery work, customizing a platform for their customers. They've got large customers from government to corporations to, large law firms, and did a lot of work with them and started to hear the same problems over and over again. And from those grew out our own products. And the largest of which, kind of our flagship product, is called Blackout, which is an automated redaction tool. So kind of the nice spin on Blackout is, when you think about these large cases and, your information, Scott's personal information, your home address, your telephone number, mine is in these documents and they have to be given over to the other party in a litigation. You want to redact all that personally identifiable info. These days you have to because there's laws and regulations around it. And we help find all that and automatically redact it with our software. So that's been pretty cool. So it's an add-on on top of Relativity that does that work.
That's awesome. So, I think we've talked to many, many startup founders who are sort of chasing after all of these slower moving, so the elephants in the room kind of companies and industries that they're trying to chase after by creating an automated tool that sort of eliminates what was a really costly annoying but necessary deed, whether it's in accounting or legal. So there's kind of two main questions that I want to run at you. And one is more on the business side of your own internal development of a business. And the other is industry-wide. So this is in the legal landscape.
Mm-hmm.
For yeah, those
legal services.
Yeah. So lawyers are not exactly, you know, granted, you're not working with lawyers now. I mean, you're working with a lot of the businesses, the business side of the law firms that own them. But they're not exactly the fastest moving, and they always come back with 8,000 things that need to be, oh, they don't like this, and it's tons of like little picks and things. How have you been able to build a company? It's been 9 years now. How have you been able to build a company that moved fast enough to grow at the pace you guys are growing in an industry where all of the stakeholders move really slowly? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It's a great question. To be honest with you, if you think about the large technology concepts, they probably legal adopts them a little bit, you know, behind some other industries. But when they do, one of the things you find in the legal space is they're quick to move. When one or two go, everybody goes. And they.
I suspect when you have a tool that gets in front of you, you're like, oh, nah. And then when you actually try it and like, oh, my God, night and day before, you know, what it was like to not use this tool. So then adaptation's probably good. But I just feel like there's a lot of, I don't know. I mean, I came from the consulting side of things as well. So when I would go work with these different companies, some were law firms, it was like pulling teeth. And I just got to this point, I was like, I don't even know. Manufacturing was another space that was like, oh my God, I can't. How have you been able to sort of, on a personal business, you know, you're a business owner, you sit down with their stakeholder and say, here's what we're going to build you. And you need some buy-in to get the project going. How do you get somebody going who's maybe not as, you know, they're a little bit older school? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess there's two answers I might give you for it. With our product, with Blackout, one of the things you find a lot in the legal space, so you talk about automation, right?
Yep.
Definitely legal's slow to adopt, and legal says, hey, this is important. This, if I miss one item,
true,
that could be huge in this gigantic, you know, lawsuit that's, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, at the end, maybe that could be the penalty for, you know, kind of going the wrong way with the case. So on the product side, one of the things we do is we understand that technology is not always perfect. So it's technology and then the workflow that goes with it. So we actually have built our technology around the fact that we can automate a good majority of everything they're redacting. But at the same time, the technology knows where in these images, so when you use OCR and try to find them, where things are misses, and we will drive them through any of the documents. So they will put hands and eyes on some of these documents. What we've done is taken it from doing, you know,
extensively going through it to where they're just sort of reviewing it and making sure, which
is
always funny to
me.
It's, you know, and I get it both legal, I get it in medical for obvious reasons. But it always kind of makes me laugh a little bit when I talk to, and we also talk to stakeholders, business people who come in who are not on the tech side. They're the people who would buy it. And when they respond to automation, there's always this thing like, well, you know, there's a certain accountability behind a human, which I agree. And we're not trying to get rid of jobs, but the human error is significantly more than a computer error. We're like, yes, I'll give you, computer error could have a mass consequences much more than a human, because it's the computer's handling millions of documents versus this one idiot who's handling one document. So there's certainly a discrepancy there. It's not worth not mentioning, but you are really protecting yourself more. You're covering more ground.
You're correct. It sounds like you've been there with me on about 150 conversations, because that comes up a lot.
In that
thinking
room.
That person manually doing it, and then when you remind them when they do their QC and they see, you know, how many times manual has mistakes as well, and realize that percentage, you know, compared to what they're getting when they actually automate, that helps kind of shift that perspective for them, help them realize that, you know, even if a human's going through each document, they're going to miss them.
Yeah.
You know, it's human nature. The second answer I had for you, though, to the question was that we're probably lucky to be in the e-discovery space, because with these large law firms, they actually have a litigation support team, and those tend to be the most technical people in a law firm.
Yeah.
So they're really the advocates for technology, and you have to have technology these days. Big data, these cases can be 20 million documents, 50 million, 100 million documents. They need to collect them from all their servers and their SharePoint and their – you know, their mail system and go get it all and kind of sift through it and get the right docs. So they're definitely the advocates for the technology. And a lot of times they're our liaison for the projects that we're doing. So they're championing the cause. We still kind of have to pitch it to the partner in charge and, you know, get their buy-in. But it's nice to have, you know, the litigation director of litigation support as our, you know, kind of champion going into those conversations as well when we're talking about doing customizations and bringing something technical to a world that maybe isn't, you know, as fast moving on the technical
side. And I would also say, like, at this point, I guess you probably faced a lot more of that before when you started this versus now, where I think literally the dollars and cents just line up to a point where, like, there's really no denial. I mean, if you were running 50, let's say you had 50 million documents, which is insane to think about, but that's a real thing. Imagine what that cost 10 years ago or right. 15 years ago to have a person sift through all that, or a person. A thousand persons sifting through that.
A couple hundred people.
Yeah, so it's like, they're quite literally, it's like, you could pay this software. I don't know what your user, what your you know, per user count is, but here you go. Or you could pay, and it just goes on for days.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's obviously at this point, they're probably reaching out to you, which is why it's a good place to be in your business right now.
Definitely, definitely. I think that world of, you know, e-discovery, probably the same would be true for relativity. You go back 15, 20 years ago, and people weren't using these large, you know, large scale platforms to do the review, but at the same time they're learning about the technology, but they're also, their data is growing. So you're right.
And we talked about this a couple of years ago. I mean, not on this show obviously because I wasn't here doing this, but a couple of years ago we used to talk about big data was the word you heard, and you don't hear it now. And it's not because big data doesn't matter; it's more important than ever. But now it's about how do we use the data,
right?
And so the question of like where to get it, well, reach out and grab it. It's everywhere. So now it's like, how do we actually use this practically? And I think you see why KCuras of the world and your company of the world and like Civis Analytics and things like that are starting to come out, where it's like the average person is now knowing it, like, well, duh, don't you do this?
It's right. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's interesting. I tell folks that you don't hear big data as much anymore because I think it's almost so soaked in. Everyone knows that data's big.
Yeah,
you know,
no kidding.
Almost everywhere, like, we have a lot of data. You know, we don't need to call it a big data problem. All of our problems are big data problems.
Yeah,
it's just the regular problem.
It's absolutely true. So I want to switch over to the other side of this now, which is kind of interesting. You mentioned this wasn't on the original kind of Q&A I had, so hopefully you can, you know, if you don't want to go there, you don't have to go there, but you'd mentioned sort of the first company round you guys did, you went through the VC sort of style, and then this one you went through, you know, doing it more of bootstrap.
Right. I mean, the company I was at before.
Yeah,
so
correct.
I wasn't a founder there.
No, I don't mean that. But yeah, like you went through that as a person who was working in that.
Yeah.
What would you, so there are advantages, as you mentioned, there are advantages and there are disadvantages. And it's one of those things where we go through it too. I mean, raising capital is really a great thing because it helps us sort of expedite the process and get quicker and all these other things, but it comes usually at a cost, as does everything good in life.
Yes.
What would you say, you know, I don't want to make it like a real long thing here. So let's go with what would you say you've learned about the value of taking or not taking VC money on at the stage you're at compared to, you got to experience it firsthand taking, you've got to experience it as a bootstrapper. What are some of the takeaways that you would say? Some are good, some are bad.
Right. And it's definitely a time for, I mean, obviously.
At some point, if you grow the business, you're going to have to take some capital on it, we would think.
Right. There will be a day, yeah, probably when we will need to. And I think for a company in different stages, there's plenty of companies in Chicago that are, you know, a year in and, you know, taking VC. And it's the right move for them. You know, maybe it's like, you know, business school 101, the answer to that, you know, it's the time to market of your idea. Are you really cutting edge with something that if you don't go get out there and grow and establish your place in the market, then you're not going to be, you know, the market leader. You're not going to be the first mover in some of that. I think it's interesting though, if you haven't done it before, and definitely I've got buddies that worked in the Valley and gone through, you know, a few different companies and gone through exits and all that.
It's like cliff diving. If you haven't done it, you really should try before you die.
Right.
Nothing quite like selling a piece of your soul to somebody. You really should try.
Well, I think that folks that have maybe gone through with another company and then they go start their first company, they have a lot more experience. What I would say is, having been a founder prior to Malili, but really, you know, like I say, young pup, a couple of years out of college. And, you know, even the little things that you go through in a startup, just making sure you, you know, establish payroll and, you know, set up your QuickBooks and accounting and some of those things. We started Malili and I like learned all those lessons again. You know, there's only a 5-year gap in there. And, you know, there's things of just like running the business that are challenging and hard. And you got to figure them out. And if you... Yeah, like, again, if you have that idea and the time to market's, you know, 12 months, you got to get there. Yeah, go take funding. I think where we were at was we knew we wanted to establish a certain culture. We wanted to build a company. We knew we wanted to be a product company, mainly because we always, I like to say, you know, in the world of product, it's the wisdom of a crowd. You have 100 customers, 500 customers. You know, if one person tells you, hey, this button should be on the left side, not the right side, you know, like, hey, 499 other people don't, you know, disagree with you. This is how we're going to do it. Consulting project, you know, the customer says, do this. You consult and you be strategic and you tell them why it's a bad idea at times, but they tell you to do it, you do it, right? And we really wanted to have that culture, wanted to start a product company. But in the beginning, we were working for the idea. We were figuring it out. We were, you know, doing some consulting and trying to figure. We had a product idea in the beginning. It was a bad one. Kind of, you know, fizzled after, you know, 8 months we were devving on it. You know, and so we were kind of a team and a culture looking for a product. If you have a great idea and you know exactly what you're doing, you want to get to market quickly, bring people in to help you with that basic stuff, you know, doing payroll, setting up accounting, getting somebody to run all that, you know, going out and getting funding is probably a good idea. But there's times where you want to kind of figure it out and build a business, and you're too quick to get funding, then I think you are too quick to give up control of the culture.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I also think that sometimes people look at this in sort of a binary fashion where it's like we bootstrap it to the point of ridiculous. Or we, you know, we try to raise a ton of capital and we start to talk about, and I know it does matter, the valuation of the company, it does matter, and the cap table certainly matters. But I think that sometimes people look at like, well, I've got to go out and raise $500,000 or $1 million, when it's like, quite honestly, you always want to have more money. Yeah, I get that. But you don't need that now. And you didn't need to pierce the veil that you'd created and do that. Whereas like for us, I mean, we got to a point where we're getting to a point where we've got enough production going on. There's enough meetings, enough shows, enough things that we're doing that to have me handle the books, which is a mistake in the first place, but to have me handle the books and be going overseeing every single detail of the role, it's a waste of time.
Right.
And you can automate it. We can use our friends over at Paro, and we can use all these people to like take care of accounting and to handle some of the day-to-day business admin stuff that usually would bog down a person. Normally, any house you went into an entrepreneur, the kitchen table just looks like a damn mess, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, been there.
Yeah, right. And that's my desk at home looks like. It looks like someone set a hand grenade on it and just left. And so, you know, I would recommend to companies that they maybe not take on the money unless they absolutely need a first mover. If that's it and you've got a raise, you know it's going to cost us $1 million to get in front of everyone, then that's what you right. do. But if you have the luxury to build it over a year and have a profit model that actually can bring in money, there's no wrong time to like take a bridge or to get friends and family or somebody else to put up maybe $50,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 so you can automate the background noise so that the people who are in the game can stay in the game and I cannot be here doing this but be, you know, here at the show instead of, you know, messing around with our records.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's interesting. So on the last kind of on the way out of this thing, you've seen this grow over the last 9 years. You've seen the space. You've seen that it was big data and now everyone knows what it is. Where do you see eDiscovery going next? We hear lots and lots and lots about bots and things kind of taking over from people's daily jobs. And it does from an automated standpoint in some cases, but what is the next sort of thing that you see coming that you guys are working on? You don't have to say if it's something that's IP protected, but
sure. I guess there's a degree of, you know, in our own products as well, some of the machine learning. I think that's kind of across the landscape,
sure.
You know, be it the analytics side of eDiscovery and visualizing the data. Sometimes it's visualizing and just finding the needle in the haystack and drilling into it and being able to make a decision. I always tell that story is, you know, at times when you collect all this data, you as an organization, you're looking at it to decide what you're going to do before a litigation progresses. Sometimes you go through all the data and realize, oh, yeah, we're at fault. Like, we should go settle this.
Yeah.
There's no reason to go to court over this. Let's, you know, yeah, oh. Yeah, we violated this law, or we had this.
That's funny. I never thought of that in that regard. Like the analytics of it, we always think of sort of reactionary analytics. We always think of like, oh man, I wish I had known that I was a crappy driver, and you know, like
no, yeah, we don't look at like it predictive. Ahead of time. Yeah, they're going through it to figure out whether or not, you know, somebody brings a class action lawsuit, and they're saying, let's get, you know, who are the people involved? Let's look at this data, and again, big data, yeah. You know, in quotes, and they're looking through it to say, hey, what's like, how are we at fault here? If we're at fault, you know, how bad is this? And many times they settle. right? Yeah. They realize, like, I'm not going to go fight this because this is all going to come up in the case, and I should decide. So again, the idea of machine learning around the analytics and making that better. The big one that's been out there for a while now, but the industry, the great question earlier about, like, kind of legal being slow to adopt, is you talk about the idea of technology-assisted review. So being able to go through with machine learning, do training sets, and then say, hey, I've coded this way this many times. Go do the rest for me. Go, as I like to use the term, automagically, you know, go solve the problem for me. But again, in the legal world, that's easier in a space where you can do it across 20 million documents. And if you miss a couple hundred or a couple thousand, no big deal.
Yeah.
In the world of legal, if you miss the thousand, one of those big could deal. Be a big deal.
It's like the future is like, it's like, what do you call it? Cubicle cyborgs, you know, like you talk about the military with the technology assisted military. We're going to have technology assisted human beings in their cubicles.
And their review attorneys. And they're doing it.
You see all the patent attorneys just freaking out right now. Stamp.
So it's interesting because I think it's a big deal in the legal world. So I think they weren't some of the first to start looking at the technology, but because it needs to be almost, you know, 100%, it's got to work every time. And I think they might be the last to really implement, you know, like fully implement it. People are using it today and they're going through and they're doing the training sets and they're, you know, automatically coding some of their documents, but you know, you don't see the adoption of it that you would expect. And I think that's because people are worried about, you know, about any misses. And they want to get it. They want to know that the technology is fully there. So that's the big one. And that's all in the background. It's all the machine learning. You know, can you figure out based on, you know, learning a training set? We would do it with our product. What we want to work on is the idea of we find terms and patterns. Now I mentioned, you know, kind of the big deal would be you redact all this personally identifiable info, social security numbers, you know, names, addresses, all this. But say a good one would be date of birth, right? If you say I want to redact all the dates of birth because that's personally identifiable information. A date's a date. So, you know, the machine learning helps you say, when I look at these documents based on the type of document, the things around it, can I, you know, understand that this date is definitely a date of birth and this date just happens to be the date at the header of a document. So those are some of the things that we're looking to tackle and bring more of the machine learning to the world of e-discovery.
I'm glad somebody's doing it because it sure as shit isn't going to be me. I'm looking at this stuff looking like, oh my God, like I get lost when I, you know what, like when I just signed some legal documents today and I was like, who is the asshole that had the audacity to add initials? It's not enough that I have to sign.
But you have to initial every page.
I have to initial every page. It was so stupid. It's like, and I did it on HelloSign, so then I don't have a saved initial. So now I got to go on like S. It was.
Yeah. Well, Scott, it's not me either anymore. I have a team of awesome, amazing engineers, and they don't let me code anything anymore. So, I did.
Even Bill Gates still gets in there and plays around with the code a little bit.
Hey, I can talk about troubleshooting. I can talk about where a bug might be, but no, they don't let me write actual lines of code.
We're gonna save that conversation for the kegerator at the new studio.
I love it. That's
gonna be fantastic. This is awesome, Steve. Thank you so much. Where do people go to learn more about Melilly?
www.melilly.com.
Make it like you like it.
MILYLI.com. Yeah, lots of info on us and everything we're doing, and our marketing team does a great job of you know, posting a lot of cool content out there as well for, you know, kind of the corporate legal audience and, you know, our consumers. We always say at the end of the day, the corporate legal team is actually who we're doing the work for. They're the ones that, you know, have it. But we end up working with the law firms and with the, you know, the large scale like vendors that kind of host these cases. But it's the corporate legal team that gets the benefit of not having people draw boxes.
Well, they thank you, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Of course. You can watch this episode more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter @technori or follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.